You're listening to a Peak Media production.
And now, coming to you from the Windy City, it's the Daily Dime with your host, Tim Keller.
Welcome in, everyone, to this Wednesday edition of the Daily Dime. Today is June 26th. And we didn't have a ton of games last night, but we did have the Commissioner's Cup Championship in the WNBA. We had some trades in the NBA, and then some releases from EA and the new NCAA 25 video game. So we'll talk a little bit about those. And without further ado, let's jump right into it. So we will start off in the WNBA, where we had just one game last night, and it was the in-season tournament championship between the Lynx and the Liberty. And New York came into this game with just two losses on the season, but they would fall to Minnesota 94-89. Brianna Stewart and Sabrina Ionescu scored 24 and 23 respectively for the Liberty, but it was not enough as the Lynx would go on to take home the cup and a majority of the $500,000 prize pool. But their win was not to be outdone in the headlines, as we had a blockbuster trade in the NBA just 24 hours before the draft, as the Nets traded Mikal Bridges to the Knicks for a haul of draft picks. And looking at the official details of the trade, the Knicks will receive Bridges and a 2026 second round pick, while giving up first round picks in 2025, 2027, 2029, and 2031, along with a 2025 protected first rounder from the Bucks and a 2028 pick swap. So a massive, massive haul for the Nets, but the Knicks are clearly going all in with this move. And part of me wonders if the Nets saw what the Celtics have been able to do over the past decade with all of their picks that they got from the Nets, actually, in that Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce trade, and maybe they're going to try and emulate that. The only problem is they need the Knicks to be horrible for those picks to really be worth something, just like the Nets were back in the day, and that's why the Celtics were always picking at the top of the draft despite having a decent team. But anyway, it's still a significant amount of assets nonetheless, and I think they now have something like 16 first-round picks through 2031, which is just crazy. They're also going to have a ton of cap space now after this move, and they're most likely going to be high in the lottery over the next few seasons because the team probably won't be great. So they're not going to be super fun over the next few years, but they are in a fantastic position to rebuild this franchise over the next half decade or so. But what's also crazy about this trade is it also reunites Bridges with his former Villanova teammates in New York. So now you'll have Jalen Brunson, Josh Hart, and DiVincenzo, who all won a national championship together with Bridges in 2016. So that's pretty cool as well there, as they're kind of bringing the band back together. But what was also crazy was right after this trade was announced, Woj also mentioned another trade between Brooklyn and Houston this time, where they are swapping some additional picks, and they got a little bit confusing between all of the teams, and the details were a little bit crazy, so I won't bore you with those. But what was really interesting was Woj was basically saying that Houston was trying to stockpile a bunch of these picks, especially some of the Suns picks, so they could actually try to trade with the Suns and even get Kevin Durant or Booker eventually if they would decide to blow that team up. So it doesn't really look like Phoenix wants to do that or move either of those guys at this time. I think they will probably just run it back this season. But that's kind of Houston's goal at this point, what it seems. And I think they'll stay aggressive either way, even if Phoenix won't deal with them. So I'll be curious to see how that all plays out and if they're able to make a move, which would be more of a win-now move. But anyway, with all that being said, I think we're in for an awesome offseason between free agency and the potential trades. And we also have the draft tonight, and there aren't too many notable names at the top. There might be a couple that you know, but because of that, the player that I'm most intrigued by, at least coming into this draft, is Bronny James. And it's mainly just because I think there's going to be a ton of drama around him tonight. And I think he could be drafted anywhere from the middle of the first round all the way to even undrafted. I think it just depends on if there are any teams out there that think they can draft him and then try to convince LeBron to come play with him, or if there's just a few teams that, you know, truly view him as a developmental project that can eventually turn into a decent role player for their team. He seems to be a pretty good defender, seems to also be a pretty good shooter, but I don't know if he's totally ready yet, but we'll see. I think it's going to result in a lot of drama, and I'm really excited to see how that plays out later tonight. But anyway, we will transition away from basketball because, as I mentioned before, EA is coming out with a new NCAA football game for the first time in like a decade. And so super excited for this. And this week they are releasing a bunch of rankings to kind of help build up some anticipation around the game. And today they announced their toughest places to play. And this was supposed to be based on home winning percentage, home game attendance, active home winning streaks, team prestige, and then what they have designated simply as more. So I don't know exactly what else is going into those calculations, but anyway, I'm going to list out their top 10 and then we can kind of evaluate their picks after. So they started out with Texas A&M at number one, followed by Bama, LSU, Ohio State, Georgia, Penn State, Wisconsin, Oklahoma, Florida State, and Florida to round out the top 10. And I don't think this is a particularly horrible list, but I think it can definitely be improved. I think they really valued the capacity of these stadiums when ranking these teams because that's probably the strongest correlation that I can see when looking through the list, especially because they have Texas A&M at number one. You never really hear anyone talk about how intimidating Kyle Field is, and frankly, I just don't think the team has been good enough to warrant the top spot. You know, they've lost at least four games in 10 of their last 11 seasons. And then last year, their home schedule included New Mexico, Louisiana Monroe, and Abilene Christian. Not necessarily a murderer's row when you're trying to build up your resume there. And then the year before that, they lost to Appalachian State at home. Appalachian State. So, you know, all things considered, I don't think A&M should be number one. If it was my list, I'm not even sure they'd be in the top 10. But we'll kind of run through that later and see where they fall. But anyways, moving on, I don't think Bama is necessarily super intimidating, at least enough to be number two, but you know, their team has been great for essentially my entire lifetime. So I'm fine with them somewhere in the top five. LSU at number three feels pretty close. I would probably have them a little bit higher since they're typically the first school that comes to mind for most former players when you hear them talking about crazy atmospheres. You know, I don't think anyone wants to go into Death Valley on a Saturday night, so that feels just about right. Same with Ohio State at number four. They always fill the shoe with, you know, 102,000 plus, but, you know, being the best team in the Big Ten, that's pretty much to be expected, but because they're typically the best team in the Big Ten, they're almost always playing at noon, especially because of their deal with Fox. I think if they had more night games, it might feel like a little bit of a tougher atmosphere. But because they're always playing in the middle of the day, you know, it still feels tough, but I wouldn't say it's like the elite of the elite. So somewhere in there feels about right. I like Georgia at five. I went to a game there a few years back, and I was really surprised at how loud it was in there. I knew they could pack a lot of people into Sanford, but it still exceeded my expectations. So I think that feels pretty accurate there in the middle of the top 10. Penn State at six feels just about right as well. I think their whiteout tradition is one of the best in sports and can definitely be intimidating, especially if the team is playing well that season. Wisconsin at seven feels like a little bit of a reach. I think Camp Randall is a little overrated, and honestly, it might be because the name is just so badass. I mean, who wants to go play on the road in Camp Randall? I mean, I don't. But anyway, the team hasn't been that great, and it only holds 76,000 fans, so I think there were probably some other better options in the top 10. Next was FSU at 9, and I like this ranking. I feel like Doak Campbell gets about as rowdy as any other stadium when the team is good, but they just haven't been that consistent as of late. You know, the team was fantastic a decade ago. You know, they had a national championship in there, but then they've had a stretch of like five seasons where they lost 33 games. And one of those seasons was shortened by COVID as well. So that's a lot of losses across five seasons. So I think they have a ton of potential and they could break into the top five if the team is playing well. But for now, I think it's, you know, pretty accurate that they're somewhere in the top 10. Nine is pretty perfect until they return to consistent dominance. And then rounding out the top 10 was Florida, and I'm okay with this one as well. Similar story where the team hasn't been great the past few years, but they pack almost 90,000 fans into that place. And honestly, I just kind of like the look of it. There's something about the orange and blue and the text on the wall saying, "This is the swamp," that is just super cool to me. So, you know, I dislike UF as much as the next guy, but you have to admit the Swamp gets pretty crazy when the team is rolling, and I think they belong in the top 10. So there's a few other teams that I think should have been ranked higher. So to close out the episode real quick, I'll run through my top 10 if I was making the list. So to start off, my number one would be LSU. I don't think this one needs too much explanation. It's called Death Valley. I think that's scary enough. For number two, I'm going to go with Georgia here. They really surprised me with how loud it got in there. I love the Hedges, and the team has just been so good as of late. I don't think you can really deny them. At number three, I've got Ohio State. They've been dominant at home for essentially my entire lifetime, and 103,000 fans is nothing to sneeze at there. Number four is where I would put Bama. I don't think they have the most intimidating atmosphere overall, but the team has just been so good, just like Georgia, so I think they have to be up here as well. At number five, I'd go with Penn State. The whiteouts are just too cool, and the clips of the crowd going nuts to Mo Bamba are just crazy. So if you haven't seen those, go check those out on YouTube for some of those older clips, especially where they played Michigan a few years ago. They had to call a timeout before the game even started in that one. But then up to number six, this is the first place the list starts to really deviate from what EA had. I've got Tennessee here. Neyland fits 102,000 and is one of the rowdiest atmospheres in college football, in my opinion. So I got them at six. And number seven, I've got another team that was left out, and that is Michigan. They have the largest stadium in the country, and I can guarantee Ann Arbor is the last place that any SEC team would want to go play up in November. So I think they belong in the top 10. After that, my list is essentially the same. I have OU, Florida State, and Florida rounding out the top 10. I think you can make an argument for a few other schools with some really cool traditions, and the list could definitely change throughout the season based on how well the teams are playing, but that's what I've got going into this year, so we'll see how those look in the video game. I'm really excited to play it. I think it's going to be just totally awesome. I haven't got to play one of these games in so long, so... But anyway, with that being said, we will just about wrap it up for this Wednesday episode of the Daily Dime. Went a little bit longer today, but I think that's all right. But as always, thank you for listening. And if you would, please consider subscribing and rating 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you may listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow. See ya.